To the NIAC School District Board of Education meeting, Tuesday, September the 8th. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a motion to approve the agenda.
Motion.
Second. Discussion? All in favor?
Just as you're approving it, if you could just redo that, it's an amended agenda. I just want to make sure that's on the record with amendments. There was one amendment, that parent-child contract.
Oh, yes. So it's the amended agenda. So we have a motion to approve the amended agenda.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. So I just want to formally welcome everybody back to the school year. This is our first board meeting since the school year convened. I had the pleasure of being at the superintendent conference day on the day before school started, and it was a wonderful event. It's mandatory, and all staff turned up as they should. Dr. Montesano has this routine where he actually introduces all the new faces and the new positions. And I will tell you, our two new principals at the schools got, it was close to a standing ovation. It was hooting and hollering. You could tell that the staff were absolutely thrilled to have both Joe McCora down at Upper Nyack and Dave Johnson at the middle school. So on behalf of the board, just want to wish them well, and all of our administrators as you start out this year, especially in guiding our district to where we need to be. Thank you for what you do, and have a great year continuing doing it. The first day of school, I and a couple of fellow board members actually toured the schools, and it was very heartwarming for me, especially. As you know, we've set up the two language classes that we're mandated to do by New York State, and although we're mandated to do it, to see it in action and to see the enthusiasm and the drive of those teachers in there with those kids, you know, speaking in their native language, but at the same time, you know, teaching them Spanish and picking it up. Our vice president here, who's pretty nifty at Spanish himself, engaged both the teachers and the students. But again, just to see us, you know, our whole push for efficacy and supporting students at all ends of the spectrum manifested itself in a big deal in these classes. And there was so much more that was great to see in the schools, but those particular classes resonated with me. So good luck to the schools, and I believe it's a liberty that we've got them, so good luck with that program. Congratulations to the football team, great win on Friday night, great way to start the season, and to our volleyball team, who also won the tournament in I think it was in Westchester today, and to our MVPs and the students who were named to the all-tournament team. So good things happening all around, and that's my report for tonight. Dr. Montesano.
Yes, thank you. In a moment, I'm going to go walk you through a very quick couple slides just to show you some of the work. I know most of you had a chance during your tours to see the work we had finished as the first phase of our bond referendum projects that were completed this summer. We have had I celebrate the uneventful school opening. Our buses seem to be running fairly well. We have a few routes that we're still ironing out, but those of you that recall, I know Carlene does, last year, I would say we made a lot of progress in that area. Aside from, obviously, these really very difficult conditions of heat that we experienced into last week, and obviously it looks like again tomorrow, our teachers came back very enthusiastically. We do have 37 new members of the staff, which is a very significant number. That's our teacher assistants, support personnel, administrators, teaching staff. In terms of enrollment, opening day enrollments, we're actually surprisingly down a little bit from opening day a year ago. I think there's about 42 students less than we had a year ago. Probably the biggest area was the projected enrollments of our kindergarten class that we had Saw a very large class last year, a little bit smaller this year. Around the district, just to give you an idea, Liberty School has at least 33 additional students. That was on opening day. You might have a few more that have trickled in. Valley Cottage is 20 students less than a year ago. Upper Nyack, 13 students less than a year ago. And if you do the math, that is actually a perfect match from a year ago, even Stephen. Middle school, big differential, down 58 students. That was anticipated. A large eighth grade class moved up to the high school and a smaller group came in. It's welcome at the middle school. We were really squeezed for space. And at the high school, it's 16 additional students, so that gives you a little flavor. Very excited about a lot of the educational programs that are being implemented this year, a whole new K-12 science program, STEM scopes at the elementary schools. We're also bringing in Project Lead Away, which is a STEM-based program, kicking off this year with an introduction to engineering program at the high school being offered for the first time. Many of you actually had first-hand experiences in a Mac Lab, the new music room for the donated by Inspire NIAC. We also have completely refurbished the Da Vinci Center with new CAD software, also Macs as well, that really allows the kids to get a lot more hands-on real-time work there. You mentioned a bilingual program. We've expanded our special ed program. We have a new therapeutic self-contained classroom also at Liberty School. I'm just going to take a quick moment. I just want to just walk you through some of these things. Michelle, if you don't mind, would you just turn the first bank of lights off? Leave.
She was backwards. Told.
Perfect. The first school I'm just going to quickly go through is Upper Nyack, and these are all the projects that are now completed. That were done over the summertime. A few more playground apparatus have been installed. Whole new fire alarm system at Upper Nyack. A big project was the construction pool. If you look on the south side of the property, you'll see some stone area where there's now a real benefit in terms of the drainage. I know the board is aware that we did this jointly with the village of Upper Nyack, and what was the reason why Broadway was torn up this summer. And I know we're all anticipating rain. I'm actually interested in the rain to see the improvements that we've made and how well they're going to function. But we do anticipate seeing a real benefit. And Joe McCora told me that the teachers at Upper Nyack that were there that few years back when we had the flooding there, I think this project, of all your projects you've done, they're happiest about this one. Replacement of all the emergency lighting in the building. A new boiler is completely installed. A number of exterior doors around the building as well. And pneumatic controls, which will help us with the efficiency. At Valley Cottage, also some new playground equipment has been installed. A new fire alarm system. Replacement of actually both boilers along with the main water line supply lines, replacement of air conditioning units in the computer science and nurse's office, installing new sewage injector pumps. I'm sure you're really pumped up about that one, but it certainly is going to assist us. They were really antiquated. Replacement of four circulating pumps, heat distributing systems, boys and girls bathroom renovations, which I don't think are quite ready yet. We're getting closer? Okay. The floor tile, which we had some asbestos tile, we've now removed in a large area of the building in classrooms and hallways. And that last one, an HVAC unit in the multi-purpose room. Over at the middle school, this thing is very sensitive. Okay. Installed supplementary emergency lighting, renovated life skills class. I'll show you a quick picture of that in a moment. For special needs students, also the renovation of the home and careers classroom, and also replacement of fire alarm systems. It seems to go forward twice when I click once. All right, get me on the high school one. Can you do it manually over there? I was visually impaired when it was large. Now it's like impossible. Okay, at the high school, we've converted one of the science labs. I'll show you that picture, a new science lab renovated. Again, also a life skills classroom. Exterior doors have been replaced. We are going to be putting in that for students in the coming weeks, card readers for themselves to be able to get through our doors. Replacement of fire alarm systems. Also, the retention ponds. There's two on the property, which will greatly improve the runoff. And I know the village of Upper Nyack was very concerned about some of those storms. The properties down below were really getting a lot of stormwater damage. The new softball field, which will probably be ready sometime in early November, and also our first new synthetic field, which we hope to have ready by the middle of October. That first slide is designed to show you the fire alarm systems. This is a real health and safety improvement. Now, anytime we have a fire alarm that goes off in any of our schools that have the renovated fire alarm systems, the call box at the fire station will receive the exact location of where the alarm has gone off, and obviously it's going to reduce their response time. And it was not an oversight. I didn't skip the slide to Liberty. Just as a reminder, the Liberty School is on the back end of the repair of the renovations, which will be the summer of 2019. We have new banks of lockers at the middle school. That is the it's Matt Lucero and the new music lab where kids will actually be composing music. Next door is the Da Vinci Center, and that first apparatus that you see on the screen is actually 3D printers. We have several of them in that classroom. We're very excited to see the kids really working on that kind of STEM-based work.
Hmm? Yeah.
Kev, let's order a new one of these clickers. That just gives you an idea of boilers. We've repaired the stage at Upper Nyack and also under stage at Valley Cottage. Those were exterior doors. We're not going back. Some playground equipment. That's some of the... why don't you click the next one? That's the retention wall that is above that is where the softball field will be. The right photo is the retention pond to assist with the drainage at the high school. Okay. What you're seeing here is the two life skill labs, and these labs are designed to assist us in bringing back more of our severely disabled students at the high school. And I know the board is aware with the changes of the IEP diploma, let me correct that. We now are required to provide CDOS certification. So Lynn Giles Harris is our job coordinator. Kids learn life skills in that lab, and they go out and do that kind of work within the community in terms of various jobs and preparing them. That's the new science lab downstairs. It's really state-of-the-art. It's an amazing classroom, and I know the high school staff is excited about it. What you're looking at is the what will become our new soccer lacrosse field, and as I said, it looks like the startup date will be mid-October. And we're going to have a presentation later tonight about solar, so I'm not going to take any time right now. So that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Montesana. Student representative report, Hunter.
Thank you. I just want to talk about two specific things, the freshman and Spirit Week. So first with the freshmen, I'm sure you all know we had freshman orientation a couple days before school started, and I was lucky to be one of the senior mentors. And it was really great meeting with all the freshmen, seeing how they liked the high school and sharing our experiences with them. So that was really great. And then for the freshmen coming up, this is a relatively new thing we've been doing the past couple years. But on September 17th, after school at 2:30, we have what is called the Freshman Social, which I don't know if any of you know about it, but all the different clubs at the high school have the chance to set up different tables or booths or whatever in the cafeteria, and all of the freshmen get to come to this, and I've been a part of it since freshman year, so I think it's really cool, especially the food that they give out there. But so I think that's a really great idea.
what day was it?
That is the 17th. I think it's a Thursday.
Yeah.
So all the freshmen get to take part in that. And also what we have already started are freshman elections for student council, which is always exciting. there are a lot interested, which will be interesting. So we'll see how that works out. And those elections will actually be the day after the freshman social. So that's all good with the freshmen. And I have talked to a couple recently. I've been in the hallways during lunch, and they all seem to really like the high school. So that's, and they all love the block schedules, so, which is a change for them. And then also Spirit Week. It is October 5th through October 9th. My personal favorite week of the year. And a couple other students came up to me this week and last week about the homecoming game, and they wanted to see, I also talked to Miss Ayva about this, if we could do a sort of red bandana themed homecoming game. I'm not sure if you know, but every football game we have a different theme. So Friday night, if any of you were there, the whole entire student section had a whiteout. We were all wearing white. And I love doing all these different themes, so I thought this was a great idea. The red bandana, we always talk about it this time of year, as you all know, with Wells Crowther. And I talked to Miss Ayva today, and she thinks it's a great idea to be able to have a little like tribute to him during this game, because it's extremely important to us. And we all love celebrating what he's been able to do for us and how he's able to be remembered. So instead of having just a regular like themed day where everybody would wear one color, we think this will really be able to pay a nice tribute. And that's my report.
Excellent. Thanks, Hunter. I think that's a great idea. Great idea. Okay, Board of Education reports. Mr. Jupter.
Thank you, President Hughes. Welcome everyone back to school. It's always exciting to start the new year. Welcome Hunter to the board seat. Look forward to hearing what you have to say and working with you. And thank you to Dr. Montesano for recapping all these great things that we have happening in the district. That is my report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Deborah Schiff.
I don't even have that much to report. Just happy to be back. I have big year for us, because I have a new freshman who is loving high school, and a new middle school student, Casey, started sixth grade, and he's loving it there. And then I still have my four-year-old who just started nursery school today. So just settling into the year and happy to be back. I really don't have much to say. So.
Thank you very much. Leanne Urban.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, President Hughes. I just wanted to say that I agree with Karen. We had a really good time touring the schools, playing in the Mac Lab. I didn't realize that everyone had, well, we all knew Michael was going to play, you know, create a symphony.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
I was surprised by the musical talents of Dan Kaplan. And everything I learned piano in seventh, when I was 7 and 8 years old, went right out of my head, except for chopsticks. But we had fun. And I did get the pleasure of embarrassing my daughter by showing up at school when she was fixing her locker, which is always a good thing. But my one comment that I also was very moved by those bilingual classes at Liberty. I mean, it's really amazing that those kids are going to have such a welcoming environment. It feels so accepted in their classroom. And it was actually really heartbreaking to me, because my son, who's in third grade, announced to me that in Miss Perry's class there's a new kid who came from Texas, I think the Friday of the first week, who spoke absolutely no English at all. And I thought, oh, you know, we've got a kindergarten class for him, you know, for kids that can't speak, but the poor third grader is sitting there, like, struggling through. So, you know, I know this was forced upon us, but I've had a lot of parents come up to me and say they wish that their English-speaking kids could be a part of this bilingual classroom. And I know we have some people in this community that are real advocates of that. And I know if there's any way we could think about possibilities of expanding that program and adding it, and, you know, we should take it upon ourselves, I think, as a district, if we can, to do it above and beyond what's mandated for us. And I think it's a great opportunity for those kids. I think they will really have amazing experiences in school, and it was very much, I'm very proud to be a part of that, whether it was forced upon us or not. I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for us.
And just to clarify, that third grader you're mentioning, we do provide E&L services for all the kids. It's not an immersion classroom, but you know, he will be getting English.
No doubt. And I told my son, I said, please try very hard to speak to him. Say hi. My name is Dominic. What is your name? You know, and just, but you know, obviously the difference is huge when you have your language being spoken in the classroom. And you know, ultimately maybe that's going to be the future of education. We don't know. But I think it's a great opportunity for those kids, and it was really nice to see. I'm looking forward to the activities of the year. It always seems that I have a lot of work responsibilities. At the same time, I have a lot of first events, like PTA meetings and school board association meetings and things like that. But we'll get through it and just hanker down and work through the first few weeks of school. And welcome back, everybody. That's my report. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Leanne. Mr. Moshe?
Thank you, President Hughes. I echo the welcome back to our new school year from our administrative team, to our central administration team. Thank you. I just want to be very short, but I almost did not make this tour this time around, and I've been on the tour opening days since I've been on the board. And the reason is I now have a transition. I have one child transitioned to college, and one child transitioned back from college, and I had to take the child, young adult, young woman, and drop her off at the train station. So I nearly missed the opening day, and I'm so glad I didn't. Big kudos to the administration for how you pulled together so many things, and from what I understand from Principal Capiella, did I say your name right? Gina Capiella?
Okay. Yeah.
That you did it, you know, under some duress, you know, almost towards the last minute. So. Liberty is always a hard building for me to go into, so I really, Ellen, I really give you a lot of credit. The E&L class that your students are currently in was the kindergarten class for both my children, so just, you know, going back to that was very, very heartwarming and encouraging, but difficult at the same time, but both your buildings are amazing, and again, you're great leaders, so... That's pretty much all I wanted to highlight. Everything about the high school has been highlighted, the Da Vinci Center, the Mac Lab. Matt is incredible. So welcome to you, Hunter. I think you did a good first report. So I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, even better things. So that is my report.
Thank you. Vice President Becker.
Thank you, President Hughes. This is the first time I was able to go on the tour because New York City schools were smart enough to start today. Even though, of course, I have to take responsibility for being part of the boat that, you know,
right.
So I'm not reneging on that. But anyway, I didn't have to go back to school till today, so I was able to go. And the thing that stuck with me that was just so wonderful, I mean, there was a lot of wonderful things, was, I mean, I've been in a high school for 25 years, but to be able to start at the high school and see men and women fully grown, fully bearded, fully adult, whatever, in whatever ways they are. And then my tour with these little munchkins. Yes. And just seeing the whole range from 18 and 19 to 4 and 5, I mean, mostly 5, was just so precious. And the tone in every school, and the smiles, and the energy and the culture in every single school was lovely. But anyway, just to get to see, like, you know, the whole continuum was just a wonderful thing. One thing Karen forgot to mention, probably because she's so humble, it wouldn't have made sense for you to mention it, but she gave a wonderful speech at the Professional Development Day last Tuesday. And one of the coolest things was just that, I mean, you know, we always talk about curriculum and assessment and testing and no testing, and so much about school is about relationships, and that's what Karen talked about. And actually, it's interesting because she talked about it, and just look at the whole child, and it's about connecting and relating and loving and caring and supporting, and of course, teaching and learning, but they don't come unless you're safe, you trust, you're respected, you're empowered, you feel like you're a human being. And then I go to Valley Cottage, and Gina talks about what are the three things that kids talk about when they go to school, the things they think about most. And I don't, it may just be elementary school kids, but I bet you it's not. It's, will I make friends? Mm-hmm. Will my teacher like me? And then what was the third one? Will my teacher...
Care about me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like me, yes, but also take care of me, care about me, support, all those things. And then we were in one classroom, I think, at Liberty, and the teacher was asking the kids, like, how are you feeling on your first day? And one kid said, I'm worried that I won't make any friends. And, you know, it's like, so it's just like that. I mean, it's so true that is, I mean, our jobs have to be so holistic, and that we all are teachers, counselors, parents, and in the classroom and at home. But I mean, being in a school, we have to be all those things to the kids, whether they're the little munchkins who you just want to, just like they're just so adorable, to the not as adorable 18-year-olds, but they still need nurturing and support, and the relationships are so important. And again, I think one of the strongest measures of a good school, the thing I always feel best about at my school is when they ask, we do a survey at the end of school, how many adults do you feel connected to? And our numbers are usually pretty high at my school, hopefully they are in NIAC too. But just that when a kid feels that there's many different adults that they could talk to, cry in front of, get a hug from, whatever it is they need, that they feel comfortable, that's a message of a great school system, besides how many get into Ivy League schools, and all those things are great too. One last thing I just wanted to mention, which is, so Tim Kramer, the executive director of the New York State School Board Association, sort of gave an update on the year in education, and a lot of it negative, about things that the state is doing, which I'm not going to go into right now. But he ended it with the first part I'll just read, even though I'm not sure what it means. So he said, fortunately, some positive signs are on the horizon. The state's decision to dump Pearson and move to a new test vendor, Questar, should be a good move. Fingers crossed. Now, I don't know what that means and what that will mean. I mean, the only thing that I would hope is that the Common Core would be great if there was no testing, but that I don't think what Questar is going to do. So I don't know that my fingers are really crossed when it's. I mean, again, I'm totally against standardized testing, and that's, you know, another discussion. But I don't know that that's a good or a bad thing. But to me, it's. I don't know that what's going to be good about it, because it'll probably be just more tests that will pressure teachers to teach it to it. And get evaluated by it. So I don't know that. I don't know what it means yet, and I don't know much about.
Just keep in mind that while it's a different company, it's the State Department that sets the specifications.
Right. No, I know. Right. So I'm not having. I have no great expectations because it's testing. And then, this is also good, which came out, and I know we were concerned about it. State officials have thankfully announced that fiscal penalties for opting out appear to be off the table for now. And that was something that districts were legitimately concerned about. You know. Because of the 95%, all that kind of stuff. And I was pleased to hear Commissioner Elia, and I'm not really that familiar with Commissioner Elia, who's not our commissioner, which is Johnson, but speak favorably about teacher-developed assessments, student work portfolios, and other materials which can help create a richer assessment of a student's academic progress. And obviously, for people who've heard me drone on before, that's basically all I ever talk about. And I feel like that's the next step in terms of our goals, which we're going to get to later. But as a district, I feel like we have a ways to go. We need to keep moving in that direction. And in addition to whatever assessments the state gives us, it drives curriculum, it drives teaching. We need to keep working with our teachers and our administrators to improve assessments, be creative, develop student portfolios and projects, and I will now be quiet. Thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't breathe out of the whole time either.
Okay. Last but not least, Trustee Mark.
President Hughes. I don't have much to add. Ditto to all the welcomes, and looking forward to a productive year. Enjoyed the opening day, enjoyed playing at the Mac Lab and jamming with everybody. I also was going to remark on President Hughes' speech. It was well received, and it was very nice. And it drove me to the internet to find it. It was Rita Pearson,
yes,
who's TED Talk, an educator named Rita Pearson, who I learned also has passed away.
No.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Passed
away in 2013.
Oh. Mm.
Yeah, but that talk is going to live forever.
It will.
And the reference of it, I know a couple of people that went to the internet and found it, and yeah. They were great remarks, yeah. And just wanted to thank you for that. Just to say, some personal experience being in Valley Cottage a few days before the opening, and lots of scurrying and lots of things to unpack, because there were a long list of things that the Bond Project did that made the school a better building. Beautiful floors that are now not asbestos laden, and doors and fire alarms and things like that. And Gina did a great job of pulling the whole thing together, and the staff also was just in there if you had a time-lapse photography thing of it, it would be a good They were moving like crazy, and everybody worked very hard to make the building great. Projects at Upper Nyack were well received. We talked about the outdoor project, and even though Liberty didn't get a new project yet, they got that multilingual violin class, which was really great to see. It really was a good opening day, and our new principal at the middle school was very gung ho and greeting everybody in the hall as we walked by, and so there was a good feeling there as well. And just lastly, as the BOCES designee, even though there are some BOCES programs that really started last week, they did an official opening today, and our new Regent Judith Johnson was the keynote speaker and did a great job. It was really well received. Mayor Jean Marsico, Dr. Marsico, who's now the COO of BOCES, always does a good job at setting the tone for the year, and that combined with Regent Johnson was a great opening for the day. So it was a pleasure to be there too, and looking forward to a good year. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael. Hi, Dr. Montesano, any response to citizens' prior proposals, questions, or concerns?
No.
Okay. So at this time on our sign-in sheet, we have, for citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns, we have Catherine Bass and Foster Bass. Would you like to take the floor?
No, thank you.
No. Oh. Are there any other citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns? Okay. Any citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns on workshop items? Okay, Dr. Montesano, District Goals.
Yes, I'm actually going to reverse order. We do have a guest from Solar City, so I'm going to, in a moment, introduce John Crossman from Solar City. And just as a backdrop, for the benefit of the public, this Board of Education has been pursuing a new state-driven incentive program designed by the New York Power Authority under the direction of the governor. And it's designed to provide more opportunities for school districts to engage in the use of renewable, sustainable energy, non-pollutant energy, clean energy. In this particular instance, we're talking about solar energy. So what's been going on is the district has applied, this is going back into early last year, to look at this grant program. And in essence, the way the program works, the New York Power Authority received a number of requests for proposals from a number of solar energy companies, Solar City being one of them, were vetted by the New York Power Authority, and eventually was assigned to engage with districts like ours in this immediate Westchester-Rockland area. And what Solar City has done up to this point has done basically a feasibility study, which John will talk about in a few moments, to look at the cost benefits of putting solar panels up on all of our school buildings to provide a portion of our electricity output at our buildings. I would argue that I believe our this school district is the largest consumer of electricity in this immediate area. And the way the program works, essentially Solar City will assume all responsibilities for the installation, maintenance of the installation project. There's no financial exposure to the Board of Education. And simultaneously, the board would benefit from lower costs in terms of our energy purchase through the solar energy that will be provided by Solar City versus what we're paying Orange and Rockland. Simultaneously, it's a clean form of energy that you would be utilizing. They're also under this New York Power Authority program is a environmental curriculum that we can engage in with our students. And I know I've shared on a number of occasions with the board my former district in Paramus. We did have solar energy panels at our high school. We had kiosks around the school so kids could see how much solar was being collected. And it really did provide a great opportunity to demonstrate to the community at large and certainly to our students the importance of taking care of this planet. So with that as a backdrop, I'm going to have John talk a little bit more in specifics. Is it Crossman? Is
that Kinsler. Yeah. Joy Crossman.
I must have read the wrong email when I was... I'm sorry, John.
Her name's Joy. My colleague, Joy Crossman.
Okay. Apologies for that.
Very similar. I might not be
You need it for the podcast.
Michelle, can you kill the right lights this time again? Easy.
Oh, being podcast. Oh, fantastic.
Thanks, Michelle.
Oh, hey, I'm extremely excited to be here tonight just listening to all of you. I have a almost one-year-old, my first child. I grew up in a house of teachers. My mom was a high school teacher. My youngest sister has now just started to go back to school to get a second master's degree because she wants to be a teacher. I grew up in an environment of educators. Two of my best friends growing up are now also elementary school teachers. So I really do appreciate what you do. I appreciate what you do in this community. This community is where I spent a lot of time in my most formative years. I was a cadet at West Point with the class of 2000. Two of my best friends as cadets were from Rockland County. So there were many, many weekends I spent in Rockland County, and I spent in this fair town. So I'm very happy to be here to talk about the K-SOLA program with Nyack School District. One thing that your superintendent didn't mention, you have the chance to be number one, the very first school to sign with the K-SOLA program. It applied early. We got to work early with you. I actually believe the governor's office and NYPA are waiting to make their announcement until we have the first contract signed because they want to announce the successful implementation of the Swiss school districts, which, if you choose to move forward, you probably can look forward to press from the governor's office and a great shout out from Albany, which I think made fantastic for us, but fantastic for you as well. You talked a little bit about the K-SOLA program being this impetus of the governor's administration wanting to bring low-cost solar power to schools through this method we call a power purchase agreement, where the school district itself doesn't have to, there's no capital outlay. Solar City will do all of, think of it as a total soup to nuts. We do all the design, all the engineering, we install it, we own it, we operate it for the term of the contract. The only thing that the district has to do is pay for the electricity from the system itself. And the rate that you pay is less than you pay your current providers, which is a mix of O&R and third-party suppliers. But that the rate of those two combined right now is about 10 cents a kilowatt hour, so unit of electricity. The blended rate I'll get to that Solar City would charge is about 6.8 cents. And we got about a 39% coverage through those things. And we're talking a little bit. I'll leave. There's the K-SOLA educational package is one of the side benefits that Dr. Montesano mentioned. It's through a group called Solar One that's headquartered out of New York City. It's where I live. We found them. They have developed a tremendous curriculum package. Solar City's used a group called Need that we've worked with primarily out west, but a little bit in the northeast of Massachusetts. And they developed a curriculum that we thought was good, it was useful, it was adequate. But Solar One has put together is fantastic. It's truly fantastic. A tremendous STEM education for middle school and high schoolers with really hands-on work. And it's not just focused on solar, it's focused on new energy technologies across the board. The goal of NYPA in working with us to develop this is really to create the next generation of energy leaders here in New York State and really enable them to excel beyond what our expectations are into the future. With every school that signs on, of access for two of your faculty to go and get trained in this curricula so they can be representatives to the rest of the faculty. It's every school will get access for two teachers to go spend a couple days with Solar One and get trained on how to actually use this curricula. And there's an access to this called the Sustainable Schools Network that each school will automatically be a member of.
Can I ask a curriculum question while you're bringing it up? It's kind of more a Dr. Montesano question. The curriculum sounds so good, but now I'm just thinking, where does it fit in when we have such like a specific new science curriculum that we put together? Like, does it actually slide in there to...
Sure. Yeah, well, your basic science program at, mm-hmm. at various levels. Obviously, you know, going up to the high school, you know, your living environment courses and some of the electives, environmental science courses, but also at even the elementary levels, there is certainly discussion about the power of the sun and, mm-hmm. and what it generates, and not just in terms of how it could be generating electricity, but also, you know, photosynthesis and all those different processes. So it fits into that area. But there's also always units. I'm sure you remember as a student back in the day at the elementary years, you know, working with the units on electricity and magnetism and, you know, those types of things. So that's in part where it would fall into.
Okay. So it's
on
here. All right.
Sounds good. And I welcome any other questions. Please feel free to interrupt me as we walk through this. I want to make sure that whatever's bothering you or whatever concerns or questions you have would get answered right away. Briefly about Solar City, we are a large publicly traded company. We have over 12,000 employees nationwide, actually about 750 now in New York State. So we definitely consider ourselves local. Local here, our closest office is actually just across the TZ Bridge in Elmsford, where we have about 150 employees. So we really are truly a local company to you here, and we pride ourselves on that. And more importantly, we actually are now constructing what is going to be the Western Hemisphere's largest solar manufacturing facility in Buffalo. It's going to provide about a quarter or more of our annual need. We're already looking to plans to expand that and double its capacity just a few short years down the road. That's going to come online in 2017 and employ another 1,500 to 2,000 New Yorkers on top of the 750 that we already have that continues to grow. And you can see our offices there again, the closest one just across the river in Elmsford. And Dr. Montesano mentioned we used to have at his old school district, the kiosks where you could actually view the production, view what the performance of the solar system. Solar City offers something very, very similar to that. This actually allows you to visualize the consumption of the building itself. So it's not just focused on what the solar is doing, but it actually gives you a deeper level of information about what the buildings are doing in performance, so how the buildings are using energy, how the solar is impacting that energy use, and this is available to anyone. You can do this on your smartphone. If you wanted to make this available to every family in your district, you'd be able to do that at no cost. So I believe, getting into the nitty-gritty of the contracts, I believe that Stephanie Burns from Keenan Bean came in and talked to you earlier today and discussed the work that we've been doing with her over the last 6 to 8 weeks to come up with a set of contracts that meet your needs. If you have any questions about what you discussed with her, you can happy to discuss any of the points that she brought up. There are three contracts: the power purchase agreement, which governs the exchange, the sale of electricity to the district. There's a performance guarantee, in which we guarantee a minimal amount of production for the systems. It's not really, it's just the guaranteed amount. We true it up every 6 years, so we don't adjust it on an annual basis for weather or anything else. Our experience has shown us that all that stuff evens out over a 6-year period, and we don't need to make any adjustments to make it pretty simple. And then we guarantee through a credit savings agreement that you're not going to pay us more than you would have otherwise paid Orange and Rockland. So there's no way that you're going to go into the red on this, as far as the payments are concerned. You're always guaranteed to pay us less than you would have otherwise paid. So pretty significant risk reduction for the district and for the taxpayers who support you. Getting into the specifics of your projects, which I think are where you'd like to focus. We have looked, and here I'm focused on five schools. We've recently added this building. I don't have it in the presentation, but as far as a visual, so I won't be able to take a look at it specifically. But I do have it in the overall portfolio. So we're looking at Liberty Elementary School.
pretty significant. This is the largest of the systems. It's 212 kilowatts, if that means anything to you. It's going to save you a little over $7,000, are our estimates. And I'll walk through how we do it annually. The year one savings, about $7,000. Again, when I walk through all five of the schools, we'll take a look at the whole portfolio, and I can talk to you about how we came up with the numbers. Nyack High School, this is going to be about 179. There's a chance this could get larger. We had to downsize this after we talked to the administration the first go-around. We had a larger estimate of this. Brought in my senior engineer, looked at some shading issues that he saw, maybe some extra equipment on the roof. So we downsized the system a little bit from a visual inspection. So upside that this could go back up. I was disappointed that it dropped in size. It's actually about $1,000 only in savings the first year. Middle school, and about 130 kilowatts. Net savings for this is under 1,000 as well for the first year. Upper Nyack, 178. This is getting up into the $1,000 again. And Valley Cottage, we've got significant coverage on that roof. And it's 212 kilowatts. This is looking at all of the sites. The total we've got, it's going to be about 959 kilowatts across the six, so the five schools plus this building. So nearly a megawatt, which is a pretty good sized portfolio for a school. We're looking at offsetting 39% of the district's power. And probably the largest consumer of power here in Nyack. We're able to offset 39% of that through solar. If we had some land, might be able to get higher. That's actually pretty good. Again, at the 6.8 cents blended per kilowatt hour, that's going to save you $24,000 in the first year. Now, we modeled this month by month. The way that these savings accumulate is that ONR installs a special metering, special meter in the buildings for customers who do this. It's called net metering. So when the solar is producing, if it's consuming power at the school, great. You're not drawing power from ONR, you're drawing power from solar. If the solar is producing at a time when you're not consuming, say in summer where there's low activity, a lot of solar, there's a chance that it will export some to the grid. Now those credits can roll over. If it all happens within the same month, that meter takes care of it. So the meter itself calculates what's being exported, what's being consumed, and at the end of the billing cycle, that's what ONR uses for billing. So anything that happens with a third party within that, they're still using that number from the ONR meter, which you'll get credit within the same month. If at the end of the month, and there are a couple of these months during the year where your solar is going to generate more than you've consumed, you'll get a rollover credit the next month. Now, those credits won't impact third-party supply. They will only impact what you pay to ONR, but the impact of that is minimal in our month-by-month analysis. The max that it would impact you is about $4,000, so it would take this 24 down to $20,000 in the first year. Any questions about that? I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you.
You're right at the end there. Took it down from 24 to 20. It sounded like we were getting a credit. I thought it was going to go up in savings.
Because of the nature of having a third-party supply, which Carlene's done a fantastic job, 5.7 cents kilowatt hour versus 9.5 from Orange and Rockland. It's a 40% savings that she's found you there. But it's because it's a different company that's billing you for that. The only way to get rollover credits is with ONR. ONR doesn't pass those credits on to the third party supplier. It's a relic of how the system works. So in a month when you overproduce,
we're not benefiting from it.
You benefit on the portion that you pay to ONR. You don't benefit on the portion for the excess. But the excess is fairly minimal. It is potentially worth about $4,000. Which is, just be fully honest and transparent with you, that does exist. But it's not, that's not guaranteed. I don't know exactly when that will occur because, again, any month, my month production, we can't guarantee that. We can only do it at the 6-year time frame. That being said, being one of the first 50 school districts to sign up through NIPA, you do get a $20,000 cash bonus. That's a check from NIPA for $20,000.
Yeah, quick question about that, because Stephanie earlier tonight had mentioned that it's not, is it an actual check that we receive, or is it designed into the rate that you'll be charging us?
No, it doesn't come to us at all.
Okay.
It bypasses us. It's from NIPA to the district. Okay. Yes. We don't see any of that. That's a complete bonus.
Perfect.
Like Hutan Moavani from NIPA, that's how he's explained it. He said, I'll write you a check if you're one of the first 50 districts to sign up. So that year one savings will jump to $40,000. And this is predicated on an 18-year term, and we assume that your costs with O&R and supply are going to go up. So we have a 2% annual escalator on these rates. 7.1 cents here, that blended rate of 6.8 cents will go up 2% annually. We have that 2% because we've looked at the past 23 years of EIA data from the Department of Energy, and that's about the average for New York State. Over 23 years, from like 1.8%, depending on where you are, Long Island's 3.5%. But here, it's about 2%. So we estimate that over the 18-year life of the term, your rates are going to go up about 2%, and our rates are going to go up about 2%. So the savings should stay about the same every year. Any questions about that? All right.
I don't think that was me.
I can't jump in. If you have any questions about the economics of this, got some numbers here of the whole portfolio, how we've walked through determining what our assumptions for your avoided cost are. That's what our guarantee is based on, these calculations. Carlene provided us with a year's worth of bills, both to O&R and to your suppliers, and we worked with that in our model to pull out this average of 10 cents. And also how we modeled the month-by-month production to know what the that unfortunate lost value of about $4,000 is going to come from. But we're pretty, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, finish.
I was going to say, very excited to offer this to you. Six sites, 959 kilowatts of solar at absolutely no cost to the district. It's an 18-year term. I know Carlene may have some other questions. Any questions or concerns that have come up at all, I'm happy to answer for you. Yeah.
Is there any way to quantify the environmental impact the way you just quantified the economic impact?
There is. We actually have a couple of different ways to do it. And I was in a discussion with two of my analysts today about what the best, so I didn't bring it today because they couldn't agree on which method to use. So I do apologize. Carlene told me that some of you would want to hear that. We can measure it with cars that are removed from the road, pounds of CO2 that have been removed from the atmosphere, trees that have been planted. Those numbers are fairly significant for a system this size. And we can quantify it. Yes.
You can, but you don't have the information.
They agree, they can quantify it of their methodology, I guess.
That's the thing. They couldn't give me numbers, so...
So we can get those numbers.
Absolutely,
as soon as you have them.
I can send them to you, to all of you.
Sure. No, I'd like to see that.
Wrangle them together and make sure that you get those.
And does that include, like, what percentage of our energy would be solar as opposed to? I'm just trying to figure out the ways you might quantify it, or like.
We quantify it by looking at what is offset from the grid. Right. We take into consideration the general sources that O&R buys their power from, so we know the carbon footprint of that, what we're offsetting of that, which is about 39%, and then we can derive the pounds of carbon that are taken out of the atmosphere from that. And that we convert into a number of cars off the road, number of trees planted,
Okay. Just so there's ways that we can understand it besides in simple layperson's terms.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay. But it's pretty significant.
Okay. No. So once you get that, that would be, I guess, forwarded to
all of you.
All of us.
Yeah.
That would be great. Thank
Apologies
you.
For not having it tonight. I really wanted those numbers for you tonight.
What happens at the end of 18 years?
So at the end of 18 years, the default option is that we come and we remove the systems and return your roofs to you, and good condition, you know, in 18 year later condition. But we return the roofs to you. So our systems don't have any roof penetrations. Everything is ballasted on the roof. The way that it's designed, the panels actually ripple. They fold. They don't all face south like some systems you may be aware of. They actually face, some face east and some face west. So they look like they ripple across the roof. But they're ballasted and held down by concrete blocks. So fairly straightforward to install. What used to be industry standard of 3 weeks, we can do in 3 days with the system that we have. It's internal. We designed it ourselves. It's lightweight aluminum framing. It requires no tools. So we can actually get into a school and do this size of portfolio in about 10 working days total. Probably be the same crew that would go from site to site. Two to 3 days on site at each school would be all that it would take. And the same at the end, that's the default. We remove it. Now, there are two options that are available through a PPA. And the first is, A, we find a third-party assessor. They determine a fair market value for the system, and you can purchase the system outright. This actually can happen at up to 3 times during the term of the PPA itself. It's not an all-the-time option, but in every 6 years, you'll have the option to say, you know, we'd like to buy this. So that's the second option. The third option is you want to renegotiate the PPA rate. So we go back, okay, it's whatever 6.8 cents is escalated. It's about 9 cents, I think, after 18 years. We look at it and say, we want to renegotiate the rate, see what we can get the rate down to, and you can extend the PPA for up to 2 terms of 5 years each. But by default, because we own this, because we're taking the federal investment tax credit, we have to maintain ownership of this. So everything defaults to us removing the system and returning the roof to you in generally good condition.
That's a question. So we have the credit agreement as part of the package to consider. So historically, is this the first school that you would be doing?
This is the first school under K-Solar.
Under K-Solar.
Under this particular program, yes.
Oh, okay.
We've done 400 plus school districts in the U.S.
Okay. So do you generally find that the schools are paying less than they would for, rather than electricity off the grid? So the credit would never kick in anyway. So is it historically that this has lowered the costs?
Absolutely. We've never actually had a credit agreement with that was a stipulation from NYSED, mm-hmm. that they wanted that in there to guarantee. And we didn't have a problem with the guarantee because we've never seen it kick in or go above, and especially in the commercial space. I'm less familiar with residential. I've worked in commercial solar for my career.
Would you be able to provide the stats for those schools, or is that privileged information? Just that we could look in, just the general savings that they've seen, or is that not mentioned?
I would like to get you schools that are in the same general conditions. So I don't. California's a lot sunnier than the Hudson Valley, so California schools might not make sense. But I'd be happy to reference you to the Millbrook School up in Dutchess County, pretty similar. And they are live now. It's a 1.2 megawatt system for Millbrook. Slightly different financing, but happy to let you see what savings we provide other schools. Keep in mind, every state has a different incentive.
I'm not interested in the incentive per se.
It's just how the savings.
What the savings, right? So have we generally seen savings? What I'm looking for. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
I have a question, Karen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I had a question about this technology. We're talking about putting these panels on for an 18-year term, and in 18 years, solar technology is going to be completely different, I'm certain. I don't know much about it, but I know with this whole environmental technology, it's constantly a moving target. So what is your company's goal as far as upgrading the technology that's on our roof?
Well, we wouldn't upgrade it over the course of 18 years. Just like if someone decided to build a power plant today, in 15 years, power plant technology is going to be different. But 15 years ago, you have to build with what you have, and you get the cost. It's not going to change the savings that you're going to get. You're still going to be guaranteed to be paying below what you would have otherwise be paying. Now, if you wanted to wait for 10 years and do it then, it can't, you know, who knows what state the industry is going to be in. You'll miss out on several years of savings. So we build with what we have today. You're absolutely right. In 18 years, technology will be different. You may choose not to purchase the system. You may choose to go with a different type of solar technology or another technology altogether at that point. What we do know is that in 18 years, there's still going to be probably 12 to 17 years of useful life on the system, and the system will be almost fully paid for. So, you know, the marginal cost of keeping it in place when it's producing electrons for next to nothing versus the cost of installing a new system. So it'd be almost fully depreciated in 18 years, economically, with 17 years left. Usually assume about 35 years useful life, and that's played out in the history of solar PV, 35 to 40 year useful life of the equipment. Did that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other questions?
So kind of in asking what Leanne was asking, we're going to have a contracted savings over the entire 18 years. Is that my understanding? A contracted savings that we're guaranteed to save over that 18 years.
We guarantee that you will not go into the red. Okay. We estimate savings. We don't know what utility rates are going to do. We only know what our rates are. I mean, we have enough confidence that utility rates aren't going to suddenly take a steep dive, because that would be a pretty big anomaly in the history of commodity pricing. It's been flat for about 5 years now because the economy's been down. But we're confident over 18 years that they're going to start to grow again. What we guarantee is that over the life of the 18 years, we look at everything you paid us, and we look at everything you would have otherwise paid a utility based on your service tariff. So if you have a third-party supplier, what you're paying, we know exactly what it is because it's 61% of your electricity. You have that rate. So we say, okay, what if we had to pay that for the solar? If there's a credit, that's savings that you get to keep. If there's a debit and you overpaid us at the end of those 6-year terms, we write you a check. So all we do is guarantee you're not going to pay us more than you would have paid O&R. It's not a guaranteed level of savings.
So worst case scenario, it's net-net.
Worst case scenario, it's
the same cost.
You still get the environmental benefits, so you still get the fantastic curriculum. But on a net, financially, it's net zero. Worst case, absolute worst case scenario.
You have a question?
No.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the presentation.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Oh, I did have a question. Do we get a copy of this deck? Can we?
You sure can.
Yeah.
And apologies for that introduction once again.
It's not a problem at all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Dr.
Yes, the next item under workshop is the district goals. The board has been furnished with a copy of some of the proposed goals and action plans. And as the board is aware, they sent around district operations, policy development, curriculum and instruction, student learning, and facilities. And the final area is under community engagement. So at this time, I'll just simply open it up to the board and any collective comments or revisions, we can take a look at those and hopefully get it back on the agenda for October's meeting for approval, final approval.
Okay.
I don't think I had all of these today when I copied your email.
Okay.
I think you had more in the email before, but anyway. I read this today at the same time reading the report that you had, and then we postponed, I guess, until the next meeting about the new APPR requirements.
Sure.
And the one thing that I'm concerned about, I've heard from a number of teachers, including my own family members who are teachers, mm-hmm. that there seems to be this attitude coming out of Albany that teachers, they're not functioning well, the standards are getting so strict, there seems to be a lot of misinformation, or I guess negative information coming about quality of our teachers. And I think that we have great teachers in this district, and I think our administration is very supportive of the teachers in the district, but I would like to even see that go a little further. We talk about professional development when we have new curriculum activities, and I realize that that's there in conjunction with those programs. I think that it's difficult to schedule. I understand the constraints about scheduling professional development. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to see us maybe potentially work out some ideas or some framework for sort of even doing more less formal professional development. You know, we have the teams in place in the middle school, and they're going to start collaborating on teaching and working with our students. And I'm just wondering if there's a way we could sort of formalize this a little bit more, where we have the opportunity for workshops or people, you know, we put in place plans to collaborate, where we write down procedures for our groups to work together to collaborate on team teaching. And really do, you know, as a board, put our heads together or put our heads behind supporting the development of our teachers and really giving them a lot of training and opportunities, whether it be formal or informal, so that we can send not only a message to them, first of all, that they will get the support they need to teach what they need to teach, but that we value them as teachers and we understand, you know, and sort of contradict a lot of these negative images that are coming out of Albany as far as you have to be, you know, highly effective for 3 years, and if you're not, then you're not going to get tenure, and all that the stuff on that APPR kind of upset me, actually.
Well,
Do you understand kind of what I'm saying? I mean, I
not
realize...
Not quite, but let me... my first comment just regarding the source, you know, is Governor Cuomo.
Yeah.
He's made it clear that in his comment about the current APPR is that, you know, there's a very high percentage rate of effective, highly effective, based on the APPR as they were first designed. Simultaneously, he's looking at these, as Dan Kaplan mentioned earlier, the standardized tests, and there's a lot of different opinions with regard to their design, the whole Common Core rollout. As a result, and the standards in terms of what makes passing rates have also been elevated. So it's no surprise that the performance levels have dipped in the state of New York. And his comment is, well, how can you have, you know, all these highly effective teachers simultaneously, you know, showing lower rates of students in a level one and level two area? And the new APPR design is clearly to ensure that the state of New York has enough scalps to clean to show that some of your teachers are ineffective. And it's going to be we're in some very interesting territory as this model goes into effect. And because, as you'll see when you read Dr. Gregory's report, which I know you got very late and probably have not had a chance to look at, which will show you some of the implications for teachers receiving developing ineffective for X number of years. And I'm sure NYSET is you know, well prepared to you know, to take action going forward. But with regard to, I mean, I think I understand where you're going, and clearly the whole concept of collegiality, which is teachers talking about the practice of teaching, when there's high levels, and typically we don't seem to find across most schools high levels of a culture of collegiality. And that's really, in my mind, is your description of an informal professional development.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And we have designed You know, middle school is just one example where we set up teams and have common planning time for teachers. Dr. Gregory, in working in concert with the administrative team, we have data inquiry teams taking place in the district. We have an excessive amount of teachers under more, just, you know, voluntarily we had over 70 teachers this summer in the LADEE IDE model training going on in this district. So I'm not sure about the implementation of how that would take effect. Obviously, you also recognize you have contractual, as wonderful as our teachers are, you know, to encourage teachers or offer additional workshops. And I'd be curious where your mind is in terms of what kinds of workshops. My experience with professional workshops, when they're one-shot wonders, they really have very little plausibility or impact on student learning. Our professional development model in this district is, in fact, as you mentioned, aligned and connected to rollout in terms of our implementation of curriculum. In fact, your teachers are still involved in mathematics training, and Michelle is here tonight and can confirm. A tremendous amount of professional development training is taking place. The only thing I would really take pause is, and I'm sure this is not what you were inferring in your comment, but formal training or formal workshops, as you describe, don't necessarily mean that teachers are not fully engaged and are in, you know, in terms of what we're providing with. And I know I've personally seen our teachers excited about, quote, the formal professional development that they've been involved in. More importantly, because which is the end result of professional development, is how well it's transferred into the classroom in terms of instructional practice. And that's the whole purpose of ensuring our teachers are well prepared with the best that we know about in terms of what enhances student learning. That's the ultimate goal. So I would really have to flesh out a little bit more where you're going, what that would look like, and, you know, concerns and so forth.
I understand, you know, you and I have spoken before about how this professional development happens with contractual. I'm less concerned about the formal. I agree with what you're saying. I mean, as an example, in a real world life, I have a case where I walk over and I talk to my colleague and we talk about it. That's a very informal setting. That is not a workshop where we go. And yes, I have training sessions where I go and I talk about in this particular state, this is happening, whatever. And it kind of, whatever, filters in one ear. I get what you're saying. I'm trying to figure out a way as a board, we can put in a statement of goals that we want to support our teachers' professional development more strongly than what is in here. Because I think it's in here when
this
it comes
district,
to...
You know, if, again, I just want to ensure everybody clearly understands. I don't know there's a district around that provides more professional development opportunities for staff, both voluntarily as well as mandated, than the Nyack Public School District.
This is not meant in any way to be a
criticism. No. But I'm just want
to
make sure you understand. I understand.
I would like to be able to say that I support.
Your staff fully understands, A, that this Board of Education completely supports the teachers in this district. In fact, you know, I don't know if anybody caught it, but on those big sheets that I had around the room from the administrative team that we had, one of the things when we did a historical walkthrough of people that, you know, what the district was like, you know, back in the 90s and early 2000s and where we are today, one of the comments about the last 5 years is the level of support of this Board of Education towards its teachers. And inclusion of your administrators. At the same time, you put in the resources that are providing these workshops, that are making, you know, outstanding consultants, as well as, you know, again, people like Michelle that are working with your teaching staff. So I'm just not sure how much more, you know, we can push into.
So hold on, Jim, can I just try to bridge this? Because I hear Leanne saying is, she'd like to see an articulation of it. What I hear you saying is that it actually does happen,
yeah,
but it's not embedded in the goals.
Exactly.
Is that because it doesn't belong there?
No, it certainly can, but if you look back over the last, again, I can only speak to the last 4 years I've been here, there typically has been always professional development goals in terms of moving ourselves forward. And I don't know that it has to be articulated because it's happening. I guess. You know,
right, but to
I mean, if you want a head count of how many staff are I'm just not sure.
No, hold on. So take an example here, because I think I see where Leanne's going. So I just want to make sure we have this covered. So you've got a point six here, continued development of student-centered, problem-based, technology-infused instruction. Oh, no, that's instruction.
Well, like, for instance, okay, in curriculum and instruction, 2D, it says develop professional development budget plans in association with the K through 12 social studies program. Okay, so the teaching is embedded when you're implementing a curriculum change. What I'm trying to say is, I would like, as a goal of this district and a goal of the Board of Ed, is that we put in writing, we support the professional development of our teachers, whether it be formal or informal, and we will do whatever we can to implement that and make that most available for our teachers. That's not meant to be a criticism of the process.
Can't be that vague, though. The goal has to be specific, right? So
okay, well, perhaps that's where it's falling off the rails, because it's not necessarily meant to be something that you have to do and then your assessment is based on whether you accomplished this particular task. It's meant to be more a philosophical intent.
Which is not a goal. That's something that philosophically you want to pass a resolution, send a nice note to your staff.
I don't know. I hope I'm not putting it too much in a different direction, but to me, a big piece of this year's goals are communication related. I was just going to say a piece of that could be possibly communicating more the professional development pieces that we do more broadly, like, you know, in the newsletters and things that Lisa's going to be doing a little bit more of. So I don't know. I'm just thinking sometimes if we're doing them, just communicating more to the community at large the pieces that we're working on could contribute towards what you're talking about.
Okay. You want to see an articulation of support from the board for professional development, right?
Which I mean, perhaps it's not really supposed to be a goal, but I just think that I think we as a board should somehow indicate formally our support for that.
But would be a board goal. These are district goals which are focused on, you know, ultimately, again, on student outcomes. And I really want to commend you for making a statement like that. I mean, it's a wonderful testament to this profession that the board recognizes that learning is not just for our students. The way learning occurs best is when the adults that work within a system as well are focused on their own learning. And I think it's a wonderful testament to what this district is about. And perhaps that might be something, you know, in your board retreat you can embed into a board goal, which would be well received by your staff.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's fine. Yeah. I mean, I get it. I mean, yeah, that's fine.
And John, I just want to let you know we appreciate you being here. You're welcome to stay. Most of our presenters after they
thanks,
but you're welcome. To stay. Okay.
Continue.
Well, I would go next. Are you done, Leanne?
Yes.
Okay. So I took a little different tactic. Okay. I looked through your goals and just highlighted some things, had some comments and some questions and things like that. And I thought they were great. I always enjoy looking at how you lay everything out and how comprehensive they are. So I was just going to go through them a little bit.
I'm sitting back waiting for your punchline, but keep going.
There's no punchline. No, just like, the community engagement piece I thought looked great. I just feel like there's such an emphasis on communication around in so many different ways. I love that we that a goal is implementing the online electronic flyer program. I think that's great. So excited to see that. I had just a thought regarding number six on that, the community engagement, when it talked about implementing a new student management system.
Mm-hmm.
Is that parent portal, the new student management?
The student management, it's right now we're under PowerSchool, which is a large software program, Pearson product.
Yeah.
That manages everything from student attendance and rosters to all of your report cards and high school, middle school scheduling, even as well as a number of guidance and so forth. but also it does manage the parent portal. Mm-hmm. We have, this past year, through a committee that Carlene had chaired, had gone through a review of its efficacy. We've had a lot of issues, particularly at the high school, with difficulties of power school. So we've gone through a review of a number of different new vendors to look at, and we've actually are closing in on implementing a different package called Infinite Campus. It's a very large undertaking to change over from one system to another, and we'll during this current year under this goal, we'll be starting the incremental rollout so that we're prepared to do all of our scheduling for the high school and middle school for next year's, the following year's class,
mm-hmm.
and then have it online and ready for parent portal and live use across the district.
Okay. No, it sounds great. I just had one
much,
small
much,
little
you'll
thing.
Love, it's much more user-friendly from...
It sounds... I just had like a little thing that I wanted to throw in, which this might have in there. I would love to see it have a cumulative GPA in there for the high school students. When you go to parent...
Say it again?
Like when you go to parent portal right now and you mm-hmm. look at your students' grades, you can only see their GPA for that school year. You can't see their cumulative GPA, which you particularly need when you start looking at colleges. And just understanding better the cumulative, like, unweighted and weighted GPA. I mean, as my with my oldest child being a junior, I feel like I'm still figuring it all out. But those are pieces that, like, if I want to see Justin's cumulative GPA, I need to request his transcript from guidance,
right.
which you get without a problem.
Right,
but it would be nice to be able to use.
Ahead,
so
then.
I wanted to
sure.
just throw that request into that piece. You know, it sounds great that we're looking at all that. I highlighted Facebook on there because that was just one of the pieces that I always find myself, and I know we've talked about it, you know, here and there over the years, I just always find myself getting that pulse of what's going on in the community by looking at Facebook. That was highlighted. I had a question for you moving to the student learning
mm-hmm.
goals. And I might have asked you this already, and you may have told me, but number three, can you just tell me what the, it says expand data-driven self-directed improvement system, SDIS, based on Jeffrey Howen's research to increase efficacy. Could you just tell me again what that
sure.
is?
Sure. This past summer, utilizing bullet aid from Assemblywoman Jaffe, Assemblyman Zabrowski's office, we did several things. We expanded the kindergarten readiness program that Gina was involved in to make that into a full-day summer experience. And a second area was this efficacy academy. Linda Pappalardo was one of the instructors we had over at Liberty during this past summer. And Jeffrey Howard's work is built on that concept of efficacy, which is a part of that academic optimism construct mm-hmm. that we've spoken about.
Yeah.
And it's we're actually hoping to be able to expand it into some of our pull out basic skill services, because really what it does is it attempts to change the attitudinal approaches that kids that, particularly in middle school, this program is designed towards fifth graders going into sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an age where kids have, that are experiencing some academic, you know, not the successes they do in kindergarten. They start to get it, I think of it as a term of, you know, it's addition by subtraction. The kids are moving up in grades, but their self-esteem becomes eroded.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to look at, let's say, a bad quiz or a bad test grade, that defines kind of how smart they are.
Mm-hmm.
And yet what we're trying to do is get kids to recognize that it really is about effort, and that a grade simply on a quiz is simply a roadmap to say what I need to do to learn. So the teacher, there's a series of materials the teachers use and work in concert. In fact, who's your Wendy Gottlieb's class from? Some of you on the tour, Gina pointed out her mm-hmm. bulletin board that
yeah.
talks a lot about those verbiages. And a lot of it is the teacher's response to kids, you know,
mm-hmm.
very often, and the message they get that, you know, If you get the wrong answer, but I think you're have the smarts,
yes.
I'll stay longer with you than if I think Karen doesn't really have what it takes, and I'll just move on. You know, so
mm-hmm.
what we're trying to do is cognizant of that with teachers and also engaging kids. So that's what that mm-hmm. program's about.
That sounds great. Thank you. Okay. That's right. All right. Thank you. Come on, Sana. All right. Let me just see what else I have highlighted on my list. All right, so district operations and policy development. You have number one, complete the strategic planning process. Just a question, you had as B, administer community-wide survey to collect stakeholder input, define what our students, which I thought was great. You know, I love surveys. And I was just curious, that one, that was like one of the few ones that you didn't have timing on, and I was just curious what.
Yeah, it probably is going to occur sometime in mid-fall.
Okay.
We're working with K-12 Insights, which is your Let's Talk provider,
yeah,
with the development of that. I wanted to complete the administrator retreat, which we just did, to start to generate some ideas as to what we're looking at is what are the real focal points of what a NIAC graduate should look like.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to start getting feedback. We've developed that concept with our administrative team. We now want to try to extend that out into the community to get feedback to see if it aligns with some of our thinking. And eventually, mm-hmm, you know, come to the board with hopefully development of a real true vision for where we're going as a school district. That's the design of that. But I wasn't sure what the time frame was going to be with. Right now, what I'm looking with K-12, in fact, I have a conference call later this week to start designing it. They're also showing me with some other districts throughout the country, they've worked with similar kinds of surveys, mm-hmm, like this to develop one that's kind of custom to what we think our needs are.
Okay. No, and I love it. I feel like that's just such a great way to be communicating with people in a way that people really love to give feedback, and I know it just jumped out as something that I thought was really good. See, it's all good stuff. Get a little nervous.
Thank you, Trustee Marcia.
All right, and then just the curriculum instruction. I just had a couple little questions. So number two was the phase two of the K-12 social studies program, and I know we'll learn so much more about this. Just feel like for some reason social studies always seems like one of those topics that the kids seem to learn like the same topics so frequently, like, you know, in second grade and then in fourth grade again and then in eighth grade again. So is that like and maybe I'm wrong with some ICU shaking your head.
One of the first things we do, which is the first phase, you'll notice it again, that I know the board has seen other presentations I've,
yeah,
done about our curriculum cycle. But one of the first things we do, all of our curriculums are designed when we get together to look at curriculum, and we have a stage time when we're going to be addressing different curriculums. And we do it from a K-12 perspective. The first thing we always do in program review is to see where we are, which includes collecting artifacts and intake regarding the frequency of instruction, what's being taught. Because very often, and this district is a classic example, when districts are not really renewed on a regular cyclical basis, you start to get a misalignment as to what you say you're supposed to be teaching, and then all of a sudden, you know, over the years, a third grade teacher gets pushed to fourth grade, but she wants to take that social studies unit that she so loves all the projects and brings it up to fourth grade with her, and that's when you start getting that repetition of things. And just recently, I know in talking with Dr. Gregory and Ben Turner and that committee that reviewed, mm-hmm, science, there was a lot of discrepancies, particularly in elementary school, with regard to the delivery of science instruction. Not so much what's being taught, but how often it's being taught. So one of the things we're looking at when we look at the design of the program is to look at those types of things. Then we start looking at the research and empirical data, looking at best practices. Usually a consultant is brought in to work with the committee to elevate their level. Simultaneously, and Gina has been the chair of the social studies. The standards are just recently being released by the state, so part of the process is to ensure that whatever comes out of the committee is going to be aligned to the social studies standards. Social studies of all the curriculums and standards that have been designed in this country have had the biggest controversy over the agreement of, you know, how much emphasis on geography versus economics, civics, etc. So I guess what I'm sharing with you, there's a very rigorous process that we go through, which does examine at all of our buildings, which is why we have teacher representatives through K-12 that are on these committees, look at what are we doing now and you know, is it aligned to what we're looking to do?
Yeah.
Because sometimes you don't want to change. You know, hopefully as we start to look at math again very shortly, I don't anticipate the magnitude of change that we did in the first cycle.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. We want a cyclical approach to curriculum development. So our courses always remain relevant, and our curriculums always remain rigorous.
And I don't mean to be taking this time to throw in all these little things, but I just feel like if you don't put them in now, you forget. I would love if we could have a little bit of geography in elementary school. I feel like I wasn't a part, I don't think, of the New York State curriculum in social studies, right? So I remember having some kids, a teacher, who were like, that is it, I'm teaching them the geography of the United States. And others, not blaming it on them at all, it wasn't there. So I have like one child that knows where states are in the United States and another who's directionally challenged. And I know I can teach this child this on my own.
Get her a Google Map for her phone.
I know, but still, it was missing. I hope they put it back in at the New York State level, or we can fit it in there somewhere. And I know we can only do what we can do. Okay, I'll move past that. And then, I don't know, the other things that just jumped out at me, I know we're continuing the evaluation of the math curriculum and evaluating the programs and progress. I just love to, I guess, remain as informed on that. I feel like that's been the trickiest one from my opinion as a parent of kids who happen to be in 11th grade and 9th grade. I think when so much was changing with math, so I just saw that, I just written some notes, and again, not to get into all now, but is our testing indicating that we have like particular areas of strengths or weaknesses in math, and if there are any major tweaks that are going to be happening in that math program, if they need to or not. I feel like that was the sort of like those grades experienced the most changes the past few years, and I just noticed that we were at the evaluation process. So
but isn't
just
that implied in what he's got here? Because what it says is evaluate the program outcomes progress, and then B, review prepared to re-enter phase
it
one.
It is, sorry.
Which implies that
it does.
I think
it was good, and I'm just like
review, right?
Just emphasizing the things that I felt like were super important to me.
Okay.
And then just one. And then I just did in goal six being the continued development of the student-centered problem-based technology-infused instruction. Just learning as we go along how we're the method for gathering feedback on that, if there's any surveys that are going to be done on that piece, or if it will fit into the other survey that we talked about. I don't know. Again, that student-centered, problem-based, technology-infused instruction just seems the piece that I know we're really rolling out the most and have maybe had the most parental thoughts and comments on, and I just didn't know if there was going to be a survey as a piece of that, or
One of the things we're not struggling with, but one of the things that we want to focus on during this school year is starting to look at, and I know the board during my evaluation, I think if I recall my conversation with Karen, was looking for some additional demonstration of progress in terms of where we're going. Part of our focus is really starting looking at, and again, this is part of the strategic planning, which will be part of the survey, as to what we want for NIAC graduates, recognizing the world is changing and the types of skills that we want kids to have. So how important in this district is creative thinking? How important is critical thinking?
Mm-hmm.
How important is collaboration? How important is communication? Because those areas, while in my own opinion, I think are extraordinarily important to a graduate of this school district, I don't know that we really have the metrics and measurements and assessments that really engage kids in those kinds of things. So part of one of the things we're wrestling with is what is it that we're looking to assess? Certainly the new standards, whether you like them or don't like them, are more focused on the application of learning, not just knowing and naming the state capitals. Our design of this model is designed to look at that. So assessments will be part of that, but what is the best methodology of determining how well this is? And part of it is working with parents to help them understand what it should look like. I can share with you, I spent quite a bit of time this summer with one particular parent concerned about IDE and what it's about in its practice. And over time, one of the questions I posed to him was, let's take a pause here and just explain to me what it is in your mind what effective instruction should look like. And his response to me was, he turned actually to my whiteboard in my room and said, the teacher's in the front of the class and writing down the information content students need to learn, and the students are note-taking in their books. And that transference of writing notes, you're going to recall the information. And, that certainly is one method of learning, but that's at a very low level of recall knowledge, which and I do really mean this, meaning that most of that information that we spend a lot of time teaching in a lot of classrooms you know, kids can in fact Google within a few seconds. Not to say that basic mastery of learning is not important, but there's so much massive information out there. It's about understanding and being able to filter through what's important, what's relevant to me in my search, and how that's going to apply to me to be able to solve complex problems. So that's a real big open question for us in terms of how to best demonstrate, you know, how the efficacy of what we're looking to get done.
Okay. Thank you. I'm done.
Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, Missouri, in fifth grade, I learned all the states in alphabetical order. And I still remember them mostly. It's like, you go North Dakota, I go Bismarck. And it's like the things that stick with you.
I'm sure that has come in real handy.
It's coming real handy. When I, yeah, exactly.
Can I just interject one thing? Okay, I took a bar review course, and all the guy did was literally for 10 weeks was sit there and lecture, and I copied down his notes word for word. Now, that's the way I learned. So it's surprising I could actually point to the page where that note was, but that's a very unique way of learning, I'll tell you. Most people don't learn that way. Yeah. But, yeah. So when you said that about sitting and writing down the notes, brought a bad connotation in my mind.
Okay. So, I'm done memorizing. So I'm going to make one very simple statement, then we can argue about it for 30 minutes or longer. My biggest concern or desire is, I think, under curriculum and instruction number 6, is that for what I believe, and I think you believe, and I think we all believe, we need to be focusing on pedagogy and assessment and how do we implement our instruction in ways that are hard to measure. We need that number, we need to have more ways to quantify and qualify our growth and progress at each school in those areas, besides just teacher evaluations. And that we should up front say in number 6, these are the things that you as a superintendent are report back to us, and have various ways that we can measure that more teachers are doing performance-based assessments, that more student-centered learning is happening, that's not just worksheet, hand out a worksheet in that student-centered, that those are the expectations of you and the district, and that we're measuring them, whether it's an executive session where we hear about specific teachers, because we're not going to talk about that in public, could be that, or it could be that principals need to report back to you about the efforts they're making, the growth they're seeing by discipline, by department, how they're working with their chairs to develop those assessments, because 25 years of saying everything sounds, it's, you know, we can do all the lingo, we want critical thinking, and it's, we know all the lingo of what a good education, the right words and the code words, but how do we measure it? And just like, how do we measure student learning? Well, how do we measure students accessing and getting student learning in a variety of different ways? So I just feel like that, I know how important it is, it's one little line that's like course evaluations, and there's not much ways to measure it. I feel like we need to measure it in more ways. And that's my whole thing. Is that I would like to see, to make as a goal, we have to have better and more ways of measuring that are pedagogically and assessment-wise, we're moving in the direction we want to go.
And I would say, in my opinion, I'll certainly speak with Dr. Gregory and the principals, particularly at the middle school and high school going forward, but I think we're actually in a place where we can get after that. Now, keep in mind, I'll share with you, when I first walked through of the high school, my experience, my first impression of Nyack High School, it was one of the most traditionally based high schools I've ever walked into. And our approach in terms of trying to introduce, you know, different ways of instruction has been through professional development, but also rather than come on hard with a requirement approach, was trying to help build the capacity for the reasons for change. And I think we've actually been, in my opinion, have been very successful. We've done it in a voluntary way, and in a very short period of time, we have over 90 teachers that have now entered into the training on a voluntary basis. But I think that conversation is a professional inquiry kind of conversation to have, and it does require our input in developing the expectations. And I can see we're very much in the formative stages with what we're trying to do with this more centered, student-centered base. And I think some of the parents have picked up on it, and I think rightfully so, that because I think some of our teachers, like anything new, I mean, if I ask you guys to take up the game of golf, it's going to feel extraordinarily difficult and mechanical. And I really give our teachers tremendous credit who have stepped over the line and said, yeah, I want to be a part of this because I think it's important that we get kids prepared for their future. But yet, a lot of the early attempts in the teacher's mind may have been student-centered, and as you described, and I think it's really a commentary on the majority, but some of our teachers were, you know, handing out a lot of these activity sheets, thinking they were involving their kids into more student-centeredness. And in the kids' mind, it was very, you know, probably more passive learning than it would be if the teachers were at the chalkboard, you know, lecturing. So we have a ways to go. And I do think we're at a point where we can start asking that question and collectively developing what those metrics might look like in terms of where we are. Part of it may be simply to, you know, we did this, I think, on one night where we brought some staff members in to give, you know, give the board a little mm-hmm. review. But maybe we need to start providing more opportunities to provide outcomes in terms of what it looks like, and as well as a shared practice in terms of teachers mm-hmm. that have had success with a particular unit and sharing with others. And that's that informal, you know, professional development that maybe Leanne was referring to. So I think I very much agree with you.
And can I just...
Would you be comfortable putting
sure.
a line in here to articulate
what I don't know what it looks like yet. But
I don't either, and I'm happy to...
I think the development of that is something we can certainly look at, and I can certainly embed. I think it's a great suggestion.
Okay. And I think that ties into Jen's comment, because she was talking about letting the community and the parents know of those things that are happening. So if you're talking about metrics, or you have examples of how we've developed this program, or we have these teachers doing this now, and this kind of stuff is going on, we can publicize that information.
Yeah, but I'd like to really get a handle on what we're trying to do first before we, you know, bring in the next level of audience. But I do think,
sure.
you know, obviously to the parents, they're, you know, I really value parents when they come to me and say, wait a second, you know, it's just the fact that they know what's happening in the classrooms. It's important because it demonstrates their genuine interest, and we have a lot of that in this district. They want what's best for their kids and demand it. I think that's great.
Anybody else? Michael?
Just really one thing. I enjoyed reading these, and I think they're all good goals. The only thing that actually jumped out at me was probably not significant, but when I got to the part about community engagement, because the website is such a hub of how we want to communicate with people, and we wanted to encourage people to go there, I was surprised it wasn't the number one goal. And it made me just ask myself, are these prioritized lists?
Absolutely not. I think the website, I don't know where it appears, up and forth. It was mainly because by the time I put the stuff on paper, the website was pretty much launched or close to being launched, so I didn't.
You know. Okay.
But no, there's no particular. Hierarchy of order. They're just things that were slapped on paper.
It really didn't feel like it to me until I saw that one, because that was the one I...
No, but if you like, I can move back to number one. It's a quick cut and paste.
It brought up the question of
whether
they are prioritized.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I had to wait my turn.
James Marshall.
Under the... implementation of phase two under the curriculum,
sure.
curriculum development. You don't have to go into it right now, but how? I just wanted to get a little bit more granular exactly what that phase two looks like. What's in it?
Yeah, I'm just a brief overview. What happens in phase two is the actual format and preparing for the writing of the curriculum itself in terms of the actual outcomes, what the units are going to be, its selection of what supportive materials, like we the committee last year working on science during their program development came up with STEM Scope and Project Lead the Way, you know, in terms of the driving force to how do we get to the goals and objectives that we're trying to get to. It's also finalizing the review of what the state standards are going to be, because that's going to drive at what grades are certain units of the social studies program going to be set forth. It's also looking at time and frequency and sequencing of what units, because we want consistency, particularly in elementary grades, so that if geography is going to be in, you know, September to October, well, maybe it's going to be September through June, you know, it's those kinds of little particulars, so that over the summertime the curriculum gets written, we start organizing when the professional development will happen, and the rollout occurs in September.
So I'm a little bit curious, and since Gina, you're here, in terms of what do you see, or what do you how is the diversity of your social studies curriculum look in terms of that particular aspect of it? There was a curriculum that came up, I think, a year or so ago about a diverse curriculum. I think you had a consultant mm-hmm. come in. It was around diversity.
Sure, Dr. Adams, yeah.
That's right. So where does that continue to be a component of mm-hmm. your social studies curriculum?
Yeah, I'll defer to Gina for a moment to see if you can comment at all about what conversations and the committee has had about some of those aspects. And I'll add one more additional thing after she's finished.
Absolutely.
Give her the mic.
Mm-hmm.
Grab the mic.
Gina.
State your name, please.
Gina Capia. New York State is devising what's called it's the social studies, new social studies framework. And from the elementary through middle school, there are 6 units of study in each grade level. And each of those units has starts with a compelling question. So I'll give you an example. In kindergarten, one of the units is, why don't I always get everything that I want? And it talks about needs and wants. In third grade, one of the units is, and we haven't changed so much what we're teaching, but how we're teaching it. So one of the third grade units is, are children's rights respected around the world? Now, we're already teaching about different places around the world, but we're focusing now through a particular question that is relevant to a child. So is there a geography strand in that? Most certainly. Is there an economic strand in that? Most certainly. Is there a social justice strand in that? Most certainly. A fifth grade unit is, what's the real cost of bananas? So now we're bringing in Latin American countries, we're bringing in the economics, we're bringing in the geography, we're bringing in the social piece as well. So the actual content is not drastically different. The way we get to it is. And that allows for the gathering of materials that are very diverse in nature. We're not looking at textbook adoptions. They don't fit in elementary through middle school in terms of the way this framework is laid out.
You're saying you're not looking at textbooks?
Not. What we are looking at is finding a large number of diverse resources that we can bring in that students can access, because it really is going more toward the model of the IDE and the, you know, here's a question, here's a problem, here's a dilemma. How do we approach it? Well, from a historical point of view, you still have to know some stuff. Right? So when we talk about geography, and I'll just use that as an example, knowing the names of the states and the capitals is great to stick in your head. But do you know why it's important in terms of their relative location to other places? That's what's really important. Mm-hmm. We can study inventors up the wazoo. Mm-hmm. Knowing what they invented, it's okay, but I can look it up. Why was it important? Really, really is what's necessary. So it's less about the studying of facts mm-hmm. and spitting them back than it is about understanding problems throughout history and being able to look at a variety of resources to understand how we either solve them or maybe not solve them so well, because history does repeat itself.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was just going to mention also that many of you remember Bill Batson and the celebration that was held most recently. And we're having some preliminary discussions about the feasibility of what's the next step, you know, so this does not become a one-day celebratory event. So one of the thoughts that we're going to be exploring is, can we explore some kind of problem-based learning kind of activity focused on NIAC history, and particularly with that set of events. And as Gina said, posing problems, so putting kids in a situation where they have to gather the research to what happened at that particular time in history, and be in a position where they have to create the resolutions to whatever the dilemma may be. So I think that it really has some real possibilities of what it might become for us.
That would be great, because actually it ties in NIAC history. If you asked a NIAC student, well, who was Cynthia Hestrel, would they know? It's like, this is history right in your backyard. So kind of from that, you know, social studies aspect.
And how do we get that so it's not just memorizing,
right,
but
really
what were the issues, social issues, what was the historical, geographic issues of the time surrounding this community? So.
And then my only other mention, I don't know how you want to put it in, or even if it should, we've gotten some interest, and I don't know how growing it is, because I noticed on number 5, it's implement phase 1 of the K-12 ENL bilingual program. But where do we or do we put anything in terms of the goals around our dyslexic population, or does that fit in under special ed?
Yeah, that would definitely not be in that area, but it would be an area of special education. And we actually are addressing it through some professional development and basically ensuring that more of our teachers are prepared to address the needs without having even go into special ed rooms for that purpose.
That was it. Thank you very much.
Dan Jupta.
Thanks, President Hughes. You had touched on it a little bit before with regard to 21st century learning, the 4 C's. President Hughes and I attended at the National School Board Association a great presentation by Partnership for 21st Century Learning, where they had several panelists, superintendents of various schools, where they had they discussed how they created a portrait of a graduate, and they had these five. They had distilled it down to 5 sections, and then sub components to those sections of communicator, collaborator, ethical, a global citizen, creative and critical thinker, and goal-directed and resilient individual. And I presume that part of reaching out to the community and then working over the next year or so will create that. So I think it'd be great to articulate and put on the website as our what is a portrait for a Nyack High School graduate. I think it'd be fantastic.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you guys went to the Ed Leader 21.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to a conference later in that this month, and part of it is designed on performance assessments around those key critical areas. Part of the workshop, once again, if you take a look at the posters I have up in the other room that, again, were developed from your administrative team, you'll see those very same themes. It was amazing, even though they were not exposed to the workshop that you went to, just through the readings and collaboration of each other, we came up with very similar kinds of things. And again, back to the survey we plan to do, is to hold up some of those concepts with our community, see if that is, you know, what everyone agrees as to where the vision needs to be before we bring it to the board, which we hope eventually we can brand ourselves and design. One of the things we're looking to do with some of Richard Elmore's work at a Harvard University is this concept of instructional rounds, where individual schools become really their own leaders of trying to focus on some of those areas, meaning how do you transfer those things into reality so that we're actually focused on those kinds of things. And that really, and I think we're in part of starting that journey, but I think that is when it will really become what this district is really about in terms of the type of learner that we want to develop, you know, going forward. So,
one last thing, and I know it's late, and I'm going to make it really quick. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I wondered? What is, maybe I didn't see it in here. Where do you put social learning or ethics in learning? In terms of back in the Stone Ages when I was in school, you actually had a class on civics, and we sat and we had to learn how. You know, this is how I treat Karen, this is how I don't treat Karen. And with what's happening among kids socially, which is now, you know, in chat rooms, on the internet, is there any place in our district for social ethical treatment of, you know, from elementary through...
It's interesting, one of the, when we developed the portrait, one of the things that came up clearly for, unanimously with all the different, we had different groups working, was that we want to see graduates that had a social conscience, that had understood ethical behaviors and, you know, respect and all those kinds of things. And currently in the district, it's primarily designed through the positive behavior intervention work. In fact, your new middle school principal, that's really one of the areas that he wants to focus on. In fact, I just gave him some information about a conference up in I think it's actually held at MIT on some of those, the brain research surrounding those kind of character emotional learnings. So right now it's really designed at each of our schools. Our principals are focused on, you'll see in I'm just looking at Gina, if you look at her school, you'll see these banners in each of the classrooms that classrooms get little rewards that are posted in terms of when positive behavior is demonstrated. So that's really where it's kind of designed in terms of those kinds of themes.
Thank you.
Dan, were you done?
Yes, I was. Thanks.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Any other comments?
No? May I make one last comment?
You may.
Short. I think this is my 18th year as a superintendent, and I have been doing these goal development designs each and every year for those 18 years. This was the most engaging Board of Education discussion I've ever had on goal development. And it demonstrates once again, which, you know, I know this board has demonstrated to me time and time again, your complete 100% engagement in this district and to your students is a second to none. And while I know it took some time and it's late and all those kinds of things, I love this. I just think it's great that you took the time to read and, you know, put it through your own filtering system, and I'm looking forward to making those revisions and going forward.
Excellent. Thank you for putting them together. I think
they were well
constructed and very good place. Okay, so moving on. Are there any citizens' proposals, questions and concerns or action items? Huh? Good. Do we have a motion to accept action items 3.2 to 3.6?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Do I have a motion to accept business action items 4.1 through 4.4?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion?
Just that the parent-child home visiting program 4.4 has been really a good program. It's just one of those small things that's very effective, and it's led the group getting the grant and continuing it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Dr. Montesano, anything on personnel you want to call out?
No.
Okay. Do we have a motion to accept action items, personal action items 5.1 through 5.14.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
We are adjourned.